Hello, everyone. Thank you for tuning in today. My name is Ryan, and this is High Tech on Life. In today's episode, it is part two of your everyday tech. That is the tech that you interact with every single day and that you really just couldn't have a normal day without. Yesterday, we concentrated on the what I like to call known tech, the devices that you are using that are in front of you, that you see, that you interact with, that you touch and manipulate, data input, data consumption, blah, 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 all that stuff. If you missed that episode, go back, episode 10, take a listen, and you'll kind of get the idea of where we're going with this. Speaking of which, if you haven't missed any past episodes, go check us out at soundcloud.com/hitechonlife, HITechOnLife. You can also find us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, pretty much anywhere. It's at High Tech on Life. You can find the podcast on Stitcher, SoundCloud, in the iTunes Store, and the Google Play Store. You can pretty much find us everywhere. So be sure to subscribe also in those services because every time a new episode drops, it'll go right into your player. And then you won't even have to wait. It's just there. And new episodes every single weekday for your listening enjoyment. See, I try not to suck so that it actually is enjoyable to listen to me. I don't really enjoy listening to myself, but hopefully you do. And hopefully you enjoy the content that's being produced and the topics are somewhat interesting to you. Also, be sure to comment anywhere you can. Subscribe, like I said before. You can also email me, ryan@hitechonlife.com, hitechonlife.com. So let's get into it. Today, in this part two, we are going to be talking about the unknown tech. That's the stuff that you use every day, but it's really just behind the scenes. You don't really notice it until there's an issue. We're talking like modems and media servers and routers, other things like that. Pretty much autonomous things that you don't have to touch on a daily basis, but they're there. The first item I want to get into is the Nest thermostat. Now, I know there's a lot of smart thermostats out there. There's a very large selection these days. I think we got ours 2 years ago. So it's the previous generation, but we felt like there was an easier solution to controlling our thermostat and controlling our energy costs. And, you know, for the most part, we have seen some sort of significance in our bill compared to other people's bills. Like my parents, for instance, pay $300 or $400 a month in their energy bill. We pay like max $140, and we have a slightly smaller house, but it shouldn't be that big. I mean, in the spring and the fall, we're paying like $40 or $50 on our electric bill. You know, so there's a very large gap there. And I think in part anyways, I mean, it is all dependent on how you choose to use your thermostat. I think my parents just keep it at one temperature and then it fluctuates. So they don't really care. But for us, you know, getting a smart thermostat is all about developing a routine that works best for when you're in the house and making sure you're not freezing and you're not roasting, which we have done both. So when we were originally thinking about getting a smart thermostat, we were looking around at a few different options, but really the only one that did everything we wanted was the Nest. Plus our local gas company was offering like $100 rebate or something. So we only paid $150 for it. Score. My wife is like really good about getting those discounts and actually following through with them, which I think these companies that do those really just count on people forgetting that they even have a rebate coming to them. But not us. We get every single rebate we can. So the reason why this Nest or really any smart thermostat can just sit in the background is because of its flexibility. I mean, it's pretty obvious. Even the basic thermostat these days has some sort of programmability in it. So you're able to set a routine, a start time and an end time, when you want it to get colder, when you want it to get warmer. But what the Nest actually gives us is access to our thermostat from anywhere in the world. Like, I travel around the world, I'm on the other side of the planet, I could technically get into the Nest and mess with it. In the middle of the night when it's daytime where I am, I could be a jerk and suddenly turn up the heat to a million degrees. Play a prank, you know. But I wouldn't do that. You know, I'm a nice guy, so I wouldn't do that. But it's something that you don't really notice every day. It just kind of, it starts to learn. That's one of the things about the Nest, and I'm sure other ones now have picked this up, is that it starts to learn your routines. It starts to learn when you're home and when you're not. And it senses if anybody hasn't walked past it in a certain amount of time. So it'll set it to away, and you have an away temperature. You have an eco temperature, depending on, you know, what time of day it is. I mean, you can go in and set all sorts of things in it to optimize it for the most efficient operation. So it's really just in the background. You don't even notice it. With older ones, you'd kind of go up and click it up and down. But this one just kind of takes care of itself. And sometimes, like today, for instance, I was feeling a little warm, so I decided just to click it down a notch. Pull out my phone, don't even have to go near it, click it down. And the reason why I like the Nest, and that's the only experience I have, is that it was one of those devices that I like where I set it up once and it just blends into the background. I don't even have to really touch it. Everything just works on it. And the last thing I wanted to cover, because as I said earlier, you can access it from anywhere in the world as long as you're connected to a network, is going on vacation, really anywhere. I mean, even if you're just going out for the weekend, whenever we go on vacation, we'll have a new setting, a new program that we'll just hit, or the away settings that they have, where, you know, it doesn't let the house get above 80 and it doesn't let it get below 60. And those are extreme, but when no one's in the house, it doesn't really matter. And I think I actually talked about this in the first or second episode of this show. Whenever we go on vacation, because those extremes are set, when we're heading home, let's say about an hour away from our house, we can pull up the Nest app, turn on the AC or turn on the heat, and our home is the perfect temperature when we get home. That in itself is worth $250 or $300, whatever it is these days. $150 for us, but that alone is just primo. I mean, yes, buy one immediately. Any smart thermostat, doesn't have to be the Nest. Any smart thermostat is, especially this day and age, it is a must for your house. Now, the next item that I'd like to bring into the unknown category, and a lot of people may consider this more of a known category because of how much it takes to set up, a known item, I should say, is the media server. Now, we currently run, let's just put it this way. We had a Mac Mini that served its purpose for many years. Before that, we had an old iMac G5 that also did well, but, you know, it was on all the time. And the iMac G5 just ended up having some burst caps that were leaking, capacitors inside on the logic board that just, there was a problem. It wasn't working anymore. I ran that thing into the ground. And with the Mac Mini, it developed a bad logic board. So there were some issues where I thought it was a hard drive that was having problems. I even bought a brand new SSD for like 128 gig SSD because all I needed to do was to run programs. I didn't need to store any data on it. And multiple times I'd be trying to install and basically it came down to that no matter what hard drive I threw in there, there was some issue with the logic board. And so we had to retire that machine because it cost just as much money to buy a logic board as it would to buy a used Mac Mini. It's a cool machine. I really, really liked it. And I really wanted to fix it. And I was so close, but it just didn't work out. It wasn't worth it. It was dead. Dead logic board. Or I should say malfunctioning logic board, because it would boot up just fine. Maybe we'll talk about that more another day. A list of the Macs that I have completely decimated over the years. So as I was building my media server, yes, I was interacting with it on a regular basis, pretty much every day or, you know, three or four times a week, I was importing some sort of media onto the server. So actually, before we get there, let's go with this for a second, because apparently I don't take care of my computers very well, because I swapped out a broken Mac Mini for a broken Samsung Slate 7. And that one, I bought that because it was really the only tablet at the time that was running Windows 7 efficiently with like a Core i5 processor. And it only had like 64 gigs of storage, but it had like 4 gigs of RAM, but it did what it needed to do. I dropped it. Let's just put it that way. I dropped it on the cement. I was at a show one time working a concert, and I took it out of its case and did the show with it, and then I put it away and it fell and broke. The screen cracked. The internals are fine, but the screen cracked. So when I finally faced the facts that the Mac Mini was dead and it wasn't worth replacing, I was trying to find something. I was considering building a new computer, which I still might do, but in the interim, I needed something that could just run iTunes. That's all I needed it to do to interact with our Apple TV. So I remembered I had this Slate 7 and that iTunes will run on a Windows machine. So I just hooked it up, imported everything into iTunes. Bub's your uncle, and now we got our media server. So that machine just sits there in a little dock with a hard drive plugged into it. And it just sits there ready for us whenever we want to watch a movie. It's there, presents the movie. We all love it. And it's ran surprisingly well. I thought it would have some issues just, you know, being a PC shoved into the Apple ecosystem, if you will. And it's actually ran very smooth. It's had a few kinks here and there, but lately it's been running very well. Now, just as a side note, I'm in the process of, hopefully at some point I can build a new little media server, possibly a Hackintosh, because that just sounds fun to me. And then we're also going to get a NAS, a network attached storage device of some sort. I don't know exactly what yet, but we'll get something to host everything on. So yes, first we have the smart thermostat, then we have the media server. Unknown daily tech. The third unknown tech item that I use on a daily basis will probably just appeal to those who have a home and a lawn to take care of and a sprinkling system. I didn't think there was anything out there when I first started researching smart controllers for your sprinkling system. If there wasn't anything, I was going to jump in, but probably not, because I don't have the knowledge in my noggin to actually get that done. So I started looking around and I found quite a few out there. And there were some made by manufacturers of sprinkling systems. They were okay. I ended up going with one by a company called SkyDrop. And there's a couple different reasons I went with them. Their app was very well thought out, very easy to use. And the way that they go about programming and watering your lawn, there's a lot of different elements that they include to make sure that your lawn has the proper amount of water. So you put how much water you want in there. It takes into account the local weather, takes into account the grade of your lawn, whether you have grass, shrubs, trees, whatever. You can say what kind of, like, for instance, at our old house, we had a huge hill in the front yard, and it suggested a specific way of watering that, which is great because after it said that, it made complete sense. Like, hello, dummy, if you water it for 45 minutes straight, the water's just going to run down the hill and off onto the sidewalk. So water it for like 10 minutes for four different times throughout the day, or, you know, four different cycles. Huh, who'd have thunk? Now, the reason I wanted to get one in the first place, I mean, sprinkling systems are fine usually on their own. They're easy to program. And I mean, they're not very intuitive, but they have a minimal function that they need to do, and they do it. But of course, I'm not going to settle for that. Come on, right? I wanted something that I could mount in my basement, because that's where all the lines came in. and not have to worry about it. And I could be outside and going through all the different sprinklers while I'm fixing them and turning them on and off. And I have to worry about walking back to the garage or walking into the basement in order to turn things on and off. Because, you know, you're going around and you're fixing stuff. And let's say you don't put it on properly. And you turn it on and all of a sudden you've got Niagara freaking Falls coming down out of your grass. And how did that happen? Well, now I got to run all the way back downstairs and turn it off. Where instead I just pull out my phone and shut off the zone. Awesome, awesome tech. And with a smart sprinkler controller, really, you're just programming at the beginning of the year. It helps you with the maintenance cycle, and then you're just programming it, and then it just runs its course. And you can set up multiple programs to run like during the cooler months of the summer and then the hot months of the summer, then back down to like the fall before you end up shutting the whole system down. At least that's how it is in Utah. We water from May to like end of September, I think. And I likes a green lawn, so I likes to make sure that everything is being watered properly. So really, that's why I put it in the unknown categories, because yes, you mess with it maybe half a dozen times max while you're fixing the system throughout the beginning of the season, but then it just does its thing. You don't really have to go near it again. I prefer to go near it because it glows blue when it's watering. All of these unknown devices could not be controlled properly unless you had the correct router to make it all work, to bring your house together, to make sure everything shakes hands properly and coexists in harmony. Because I've been such a hardcore Apple fan for many years, the answer was clear. We're doing the Airport Extreme, we're doing the Airport Expresses. That's just what we're doing. Sorry, there's no real discussion on that, but that's what we're doing. And we had multiple Airport Expresses, and we had one Airport Extreme that the power supply actually went bad, and it was way out of warranty. It was like 3 years old already. So we had to can that and get another Airport Express. And it surprises me that Apple decided to discontinue this product. I guess it just wasn't a big part of their, you know, the market that they were wanted to target. And the manpower that, and the resources that would be used for that could be better used on newer stuff, on newer products, more appealing products for the masses. So once I found out that they were going to discontinue that, I knew I had to find something, because the last Airport Express I had, I believe, was just 802.11n. It didn't even have AC in it. So I started looking around and seeing what I could find with other routers. And there's a ton out there, you know, that are really powerful and they'll cover your whole house for the most part, but you're still going to get a few dropouts here and there, just because like our house is laid out. So everything's down in the basement, but we still need, you know, internet three levels up. And it's difficult to get clean internet that far away from where your router is. Now, as a tech nerd, I tend to follow a lot of tech reviewers and YouTubers that kind of just, you know, present you with the answer if you know what you're looking for. And Lewis over on Unbox Therapy, you guys have probably all seen his stuff or are subscribers. He did one on the Amplify stuff, the Amplify mesh wireless system. And that was the first thing that I ever saw that I thought, okay, that's probably what I need in my house. I was looking, so Amplify is owned by Ubiquiti, which does a lot of corporate and like industrial type internet services. So like you have a massive building and you need to have wireless points throughout the whole building. They have stuff for that. Really cool stuff. But they never actually come into the consumer market until they had this new Amplify thing. So Lewis on Unbox Therapy, he shows this thing off and it's pretty cool. I mean, it has its central base station, plug in your router, and then I think it has four Ethernet LAN ports to go anywhere in the house. And then it also has, in addition to 802.11ac, it also has speed testing done within the app. It's a very rich and easy to use app, which I love that when I can control every aspect. You can read, you know, you can name things. You can give static IP addresses, name things. You can group certain devices together. So if you have like three printers, you can group all those printers together. You can group like tablets, computers, phones. You can see who's using it at all times, and you can actually cut someone off from your network without having to take the network down or mess up anyone else's connection. So in addition to that, though, the reason why I got it is because it's wireless mesh technology. So that means that you have a mesh point that you plug into the wall a certain distance away from your main router, the main base station. And then you have this particular kit had two. And so we have the main base station in the basement where our cable modem is hooked up. And then we have a mesh point on our second level, a mesh point on our third level. And that gives us complete wireless coverage through not only just our house, but out into our backyard and our front yard. And I'm sure the neighbors see our network and go, how is that signal so dang strong? That's why. So the Amplify is what really ties it all together and allows this kind of functionality between all these unknown items. Now, there's a few other things that I want to invest in that kind of fit within this same unknown daily tech. We don't live in like a really dangerous city at all. Like, it's just a little town that no one's ever heard of unless you've driven through it. The crime is really low. Let's just put it that way. So I don't really need any cameras, but I would like to have at least a couple, because you never know what teenagers are going to do. Even in the most wonderful of towns or cities, teenagers are just dumb. So they're going to do something, right? So I want to have a couple of those. I really like, because I'm already in with the Nest thermostat, I really like their smoke detectors. Gives me a little bit more sense of security when we're away from the home, knowing that those are always monitoring and that I don't just suddenly come home and the house is on fire, or, you know, it'll alert me wherever I am. I just have to save up like $1,200 because that's how many smoke detectors I have in my house. That's a lot of money. Also, like I mentioned earlier, I want to get into more like network attached storage. As my kids get older, I want to be able to have a central folder for all of our stuff, a central location for everything on our computers so that it can be accessed at any time and saved securely. So I'll probably start out with just a basic NAS device that gives me local backup, and then I'll do a remote backup with Dropbox or something like that. You know what? Come to think of it, I probably should have added Dropbox, even though it's not like a physical piece of tech. I should have added that to the daily tech that I use, like the known stuff, because I use Dropbox every single day. You know what though? We're going to save that for a different episode where I'm going to go into a little bit of detail about whether you should actually be using, you know, iCloud Drive or those, you know, none of them are better than the other, but which one makes more sense to use? I prefer Dropbox, but I use all of them. Honestly, I use Google Drive, OneDrive from Microsoft Office. I use Dropbox, and I also use iCloud Drive. So I use all four of those for various things. In all honesty, I probably have like 5 or 6 terabytes worth of online storage that I have access to at any given time because I use all these services. Anyways, we'll get into that in another episode. But hopefully this kind of gives you an idea of what unknown tech I use on a daily basis and compare and contrast. I want to hear what you guys use or, you know, don't use, what you did use, what worked best for you. Be sure to comment when you subscribe. Also comment on the episode. Interact with me. If you go to like SoundCloud, you can comment on the track itself, which is really cool. So I can see what you guys are thinking at any given time. You can respond to something I said at that exact moment on the track, so I know what I was saying, so it could be in context. Well, that is it for part 2 of Everyday Tech, the unknown devices. Be sure to follow us on all forms of social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, the normal stuff, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes Library, Google Play. You can find us on all those. Whatever podcast player you're using, search for High Tech on Life, and I'm sure we'll come up. If we don't, email me, ryan@hightechonlife.com, and I will get the show up on that particular service. Thank you again, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to me blab on for 30 minutes. It's a little rough sometimes. Hope you guys have a great day, and I will talk to you in the next one.